If you've noticed your friends have been a little more tidy than usual or your thrift store a bit better stocked, it might be because of Netflix. The streaming series Tidying Up with Marie Kondo has spurred an organizational renaissance, or at least a conversation about one.
In the series, Kondo helps others clean up their home with the KonMari method, which suggests ridding yourself of everything that doesn't spark joy. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. Today we are organizing our thoughts on tidying up with Marie Kondo, so come right back.
Support for this NPR podcast and the following message come from WordPress.com. With powerful site-building tools and thousands of themes to choose from, WordPress.com lets their users pursue what they love by launching a site that's free to start with room to grow. Their customer support team is made of actual WordPress experts who are standing by to help you 24 hours a day, including weekends. And WordPress users own their content forever. Get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/happyhour.
Welcome back. You just met NPR Music's Stephen Thompson. Also with us is Glenn Weldon of the NPR Arts Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And also with us, one of our favorites, and I would say our correspondent on homemaking television shows from NPR's Code Switch team, Kat Chow. Hi, Kat.
Hey, Linda.
I'm so happy that you can be with us.
Thank you. I really love that title. It's all I've ever wanted.
It's your home TV correspondent.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
Great.
All right. I'm going to go first over to you, Thompson, because my experience with you is that you are a putterer a little bit. You putter around and you sort and you clean, and that's why I'm always impressed by the lack of clutter in your house, is that you can't sit still,
right?
So you putter around sorting. What was your reaction to Tidying Up with Marie Kondo?
I had a very, very mixed reaction to this show. On one hand, I now know how to fold a fitted sheet, which actually I considered a great gift.
Yep.
I really did not know how to do it, and now I do.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marie Kondo. I also appreciated the fact that the KonMari method is centered on, more than I think anything else, work.
Yeah.
That you have to take your stuff and for example, she says she separates out clothes. You have to take all your clothes and put them in a gigantic, ugly pile on your bed. And then you see how massively overstocked you are with clothes. And that helps you go through and winnow out the stuff you don't need. I appreciated the fact that this show kind of establishes that implementing this method is the job of the people whose stuff it is.
Yeah.
She doesn't bring in a team of people to go through your stuff for you. You have to go and do it and hunker down. And sometimes it's a slog and sometimes it's miserable, but you have to actually do the work. These are some of the things that I appreciate about this show. Things I don't like very much about this show, most of the couples.
Really? Huh.
I think when the tension in the relationship revolved entirely around tidying, it worked fine. But when I felt like there were significantly larger issues in the relationship where the couple needed like serious counseling about things not related to tidying, there's a couple that spends a lot of time just making these really nasty digs at each other. He talks about how much he works. While she's at home raising toddlers.
Right.
And I'm like, there are issues here that need to be pulled apart that are not about tidying.
Yeah.
I found some of the actual relationships depressing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's fair.
I don't disagree. And I think, you know, housework always brings up a couple issues. I want to throw over to Kat next. Kat, what was your response to this show?
So, all right. I mean, I come from a family of hoarders where my dad is kind of a hoarder, and I sort of have those tendencies that I've really worked hard to combat.
Mm-hmm.
And Linda, you and I have talked about this like a bunch when my apartment flooded a few years ago. And we talked a lot about how we hold on to stuff, or if stuff is just really stuff. So I found this series just, the idea of putting all of your belongings into a pile and then going through it, it just struck me as like personally overwhelming for me. But overall, I really liked it because I think that as opposed to, you know, like the Hoarders show that you see on like other networks like TLC or whatever networks, it just is much more compassionate at not judging the person for their choices. And I mean, you know, kind of just displays their life and their decisions about what belongings they hold dear to them. And so I really appreciated that. And I thought that it is much more thoughtful. And I've only just started reading her book. And I like that it's more spiritual and that it makes you address how you view these objects, which I know we're going to get to
yeah.
in a little bit.
But. Okay.
Glenn, thoughts?
Well, we agree that we'd watch at least 3 episodes, and I watched 3 because that was just enough for me. I mean, just as a show, the payoff is tidiness, and that doesn't keep me going for a whole hour. You know what I mean? Like in a house decorating show or a house buying show or renovation, there's something is created,
yeah,
and here something is put into a closet.
I think it's not a reveal focused show,
right?
Like a Trading Spaces or something like that.
As the gentlest of possible rebukes to rampant consumerism, I like it. Very gentle, a cooing rebuke to rampant consumerism. I don't like that they keep saying that she coos. I don't like that. It just feels weirdly, I don't want to say racist, but reductive in a weird way.
It
just
does.
Sort of like feminizing. Yeah. And
Fine line between reductive and feminizing and racist.
Yeah.
When you're talking
and infantilizing.
Infantilizing. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
I just love. I want to know Ina's story, the translator. She's got stories to tell, I'm sure.
Uh-huh.
I want the show around her.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, it just for me, it was just not enough there.
Yeah. I remember when I got a copy of Marie Kondo's book, which was called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up. Probably if you don't own it, someone you know does. When I got a copy of that book, the funniest thing was I wound up with, on my desk, 2 copies of the book without realizing it because of the amount of stuff that was on my desk.
Uh-huh.
Still true. Not really true as much at home as it used to be. Ever since I got a dog, I kind of had to deal with stuff in the house differently because he'll put everything in his mouth. But the point is, I was always drawn to the book because I liked the fact that, unlike a lot of other books about organizing, it is so focused on getting rid of stuff.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of books about organizing are focused on what should your system be? What kind of boxes should you put things in? How do you go about, you know, sorting all your stuff? And none of them have the focus that she has, which is if you feel like your stuff is disorganized and you live in a kind of a messy environment, probably your problem is that you own too much stuff. Probably your problem is that you own way too much stuff. But I think for me, I had really the emotional kind of pull of dealing with how you treat objects is, for me, she's doing an organizational home HGTV kind of thing crossed with a, you know, self-care kind of thing. One of the things that's always gotten a lot of attention about her from the time her method was created was things that I think, if you're not accustomed to the way she attaches a lot of kind of animism to objects, that her way of, I want to, you know, if you're going to throw something away, you thank it for serving you or being worthwhile to you. When she comes into a home, she sort of introduces herself to the home. And if you're not accustomed to those things, they can seem very weird to some people, but that's very much cultural. And it was so funny to me that you get this reaction that's like, it's very weird to thank objects. But then you get people where when she says you should purge your books, people who feel like, honestly, it's like you're asking me to get rid of my dog.
Oh, when she came after the book fetishist. Or actually, let me say, when the book fetishist came after her, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, and it was...
I just sat back and just, oh, yes.
It was just so perplexing. I mean...
But if you are that attached to, like, the people who talk about, and I completely get it, and I have known many people like this, and I have loved many people like this, even though I'm not this person.
I have been raised by several people like this.
The people who say the idea of throwing away a book is emotionally repellent to me. There are those people. And if you have that feeling of it's emotionally repelling to throw away a physical copy of a book, not a manuscript, not the only copy that will ever exist. If you have that feeling, then you understand what she's talking about when she talks about attaching emotional meaning to objects, right?
Exactly, yeah. And I mean, I think what she was saying also, which I think she said in a statement or tweeted, was how if you have that big of a reaction to it, then maybe it sends a message about how you feel about it.
Right.
So then
maybe
don't
books,
throw it
maybe
out.
Maybe books spark joy for you and you don't
joy.
Have to get rid of them.
Exactly.
That's what I like. I mean, so she helped me kind of reorient the way I feel attachment to things where, you know, like I'll have like a blanket, for example, that someone gifted me many years ago, like a sister or something. And it wasn't even from my childhood, but like I have all of these memories attached to it and I don't really need it. You know, like a dog has chewed it or something. And yet it still sits on my couch because like, well, it's cold and I go through all of these excuses. But I mean, what she taught me is that, I mean, I can just thank it and get rid of it and throw it out because no one wants it.
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't really even be on my couch. It's probably gross. And so, I mean, it's nice.
Mm-hmm. You know, I can respect the animism, the Shinto tradition of thanking your objects.
Yeah.
I don't buy it, and it makes me feel silly.
But it's not for you. But it's not for us to buy or not buy. That's the whole point.
And also a thing that here's what I love about Spark Joy. I love spark. I love that translation. Whoever chose that word nailed it, because I love active verbs. I love verbs that are dynamic, that hint at a suddenness and a forceful thing. You know what I hate about that is joy. Joy, maybe my factory set defaults are just not. That is such a high bar to clear. And it has, you know, you know who has adopted the word joy is like the ASL community. Big in Christian culture, big in Protestant culture, the word joy. It has attained, in my life anyway, a transcendent meaning that even the best shirt. even if it makes my arms look great, joy is not. Like, I'm the guy who didn't want to call the segment What's Making Us Happy. Remember that? I was like, no, I don't know. Happy is a high bar. Joy is just not.
Yeah.
But here's the point. Not for me.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, when the stuff about the books was coming up and when people were talking about, there was a kind of a widely shared tweet that talked about, you know, not all books are meant to spark joy. Some are meant to challenge you and all that stuff. And there was some talk about the fact that spark joy is a kind of an imprecise translation,
right.
According to what I read. That it's more like an electricity. It's more like an emotional, I don't want to say tingle, but
feel something.
It makes you feel something powerful and significant to you, but it's not exactly joy in the same way that you hate joy.
Right.
You can also interpret, it's like any system, right? You can pick and choose what works for you and what doesn't. And you can interpret spark joy any number of ways. Like, hold it up. Do I like this?
Yeah.
I think that is a perfectly valid translation of that if you are not somebody who is necessarily finding joy in everything in your life.
Yeah. I will say, speaking of joy, though, I mean, one of the biggest critiques that I had of the show itself was in the first episode, the friend episode, where I think the mother says, well, I mean, what do you do with your kids when you're trying to fold all these clothes? And she asks Marie Kondo that, and Marie Kondo is like, well, my baby girl loves to help me. And I just kept thinking, the look on Miss Friend's face was just like, what the hell am I supposed to do with
this? And I think Marie Kondo's kids are a little younger, too.
Yeah. Right. Well, and she does acknowledge at some point that they don't always want to do it. And that, you know, she does have to kind of, you know, redirect them and things like that. But the thing that I think is really interesting about it, and the thing I want to talk about, Stephen touched on this, and we've begun to touch on this, is that the reaction to the show and then the show itself raised a lot of really interesting questions for people about gender politics and also racial politics.
Yeah.
Stephen, if I may say, my understanding is that your partner, Katie, was sort of was kind of bummed about the gender politics of it always seeming in these families, like in the heterosexual couples, that most of the time the woman, who's often the mom, is bearing so much weight.
Yeah, she and I watched this show separately and had really pretty identical reactions to it, especially the first few episodes. And in conversations with Katie, she brought up the issue of the third shift and people whose role in the family is to work and raise kids and keep a tidy house. Mm-hmm. And you see this enormous emotional and logistical burden, particularly on the mom in those first few episodes. And the first three episodes of this show, there's one where the guy's like, I don't know, happy wife, happy life, whatevs. You just see the look on his face, like enduring her BS, you know, and that's an unpleasant dynamic to watch. And it's why I kind of said,
I didn't react to that couple that way, which I say only because I suspect people are listening who didn't, but I understand what you're saying. It definitely seemed like he was going along to get along. He does say the happy wife, happy life.
I just saw a lot of unequal burdens playing out in those first few episodes in ways that kind of lent themselves to feeling like the show is a little bit depressing when it's about more than just tidying. Mm-hmm. When the couple's main problem is tidying, it's fine. When the couple's main problem seems to run deeper, then you start mapping your own relationship dynamics and your own family experience and your own sense of any unequal burden that you carry. You start to map onto this show and it's a little bit harder to watch.
You're almost literally arranging the deck chairs on the Titanic.
Kat, what were your reactions to kind of the dynamics on the show and the dynamics around the critiques?
I felt like a lot of the ways people were describing her, as Glenn pointed out, just were so, they made her so diminutive and just like smaller or, you know, cutesy in a way that really bothered me.
Yeah.
And maybe part of it is just the way she behaves or, you know, the way she acts. It's just a cultural thing. But I also thought that I think that the way a lot of people read her was not really spectacular.
Yeah. There's enough cultural baggage around kind of Asian women being treated like they are small and cutesy in the way that you're talking about. I mean, it's a very common pernicious stereotype, I feel like.
Right.
And in some ways, she's playing into it because of the way that she is that very cheerful, super cheerful person.
Yeah, yeah.
But so are a lot of people on television and on home improvement shows, for sure.
Yeah. And I think that there was something about that stereotype or the way people are talking about her that makes it seem as though her methods are really wacky.
Right.
I'm talking about the Shintoism and
right.
the animism. And, you know, that's how a lot of people who partake in that religion really look at objects.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that there was just this big disconnect, and it was a little frustrating to see.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like most people can understand the idea of spiritual relationships with objects.
Yeah.
Just not everyday objects, maybe.
Right.
Like, because I always remember the lovely essay that you wrote about the shoes, about your mother's shoes.
Yeah.
And that they reminded you of your mother who died when you were young.
Right.
And I feel like people know those experiences, and nobody looks at that and says, well, it's weird to attach so much meaning to shoes. It's the everyday objects that people have trouble understanding you can approach in the same way.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Kat. And I will be curious to hear what a lot of you have to say about
Marie
Kondo.
People have thoughts on this show.
People have
they
thoughts.
Do.
And find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH and tell us what you think about this show and this method, because I know people have stories. People have so many stories. That brings us to the end of our show. You can follow Kat at Kat Chow. Thank you all so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, Kat, as always. And thank you for listening. If you want more from us, including links to what made us happy this week and recommendations for your weekend, please subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all right back here on Friday.
I feel pretty.
When do we feel pretty?
Oh, so pretty.
Why do we feel pretty? And who gets to decide what pretty is? We'll answer our listeners' questions all about beauty this week on the Code Switch Podcast.